I am very, very grateful to be here, and it's the first opening you had so many young lads, and it's just great. And I don't wait to set up a special guest, and for me, I'm not special, but I was just like you lads. So I was sitting in that seat with the same dream he had. I was playing with the development squad from Kildare all the age, from when I was 13 all the way up to the age that I was 18. And I had the same dream he had, playing senior for a club, with going to play at Croke Park, Wimbledon, Ireland or Leinster. I had the exact same dream as you. Yeah, look, being in here tonight, I get excited, you know, I'm really excited to be here and just talk to you. And when I talk to you, it's not that I'm talking from above you, I'm on your level. Because I was sitting in that chair once, and I'm not that much older than you, so I'm only 24 at the end of the day. I still do play football today, luckily enough. The recovery has given me the chance to be able to play football again. I was on trial with this Kildare Seniors last year. I didn't make it, but I'm going to go again. So, like I said, my name's Connor, I'm from Kildare. You know, football has just been my life from the age of 8. I remember the first time I ever started playing football. My best friend is my neighbour, he's a year older than me, and he was getting to play football for the first time. And I remember my neighbour coming in and saying, oh, he's going to train it. And I threw a tantrum. So I want to play football too. And it was the best tantrum I ever threw, because I went and I played football that day, and I remember going up and we just felt a love for it. You know, have a love for football that I've never felt for anything else in my life. So obviously growing up, yeah, really interested in football. Loved going to the gym, going to school. I loved going to school. I wasn't an academic person, but I loved going to school just to be there to play football. You know, I loved to be there interacting with the lads. And I'm a very outdoors person. I love doing things that give you good endorphins and just, you know, just having a lot of fun. So when I was in primary school, I was in a small primary school. So there was only 19 of us in the class. And then I made a change to secondary school. So when I went to secondary school, I went to a school that had about 1,200 people. And this is something I always say, you know, for me, that change was massive because I come from a really small area. So let's imagine there's about 200 people in my area. So it's one GAA club, it's a road in and it's a road out. So I moved to now and got into the next local town that's massive. Probably never been there before. And I got into a school that has 1,200 kids now. And, you know, everything's different. It's not just football now. There's football, there's basketball, there's hurling. And I did actually pick up a hurl before. I tried to play it once. Oh, that is how it went, but I did try it because I just love sport. And I made this big change and I started getting into tutoring classes. And I'd heard about drugs before. I come from a council estate. So in the council estate I'm from, drug addiction would be a big problem. So I'd seen drugs when I was growing up. I'd seen crime. I'd seen gangs. I'd seen all this type of stuff when I was growing up. And for me, I just wanted to stay away from it. You know, my dream was to play for Kildare, play in Croke Park and win a Leinster. And that was the same thing I kept banging my head when I was in school. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to continue playing football. I'm going to continue playing for Kildare. And then I started hanging around with people who were taking drugs. And look, they always say it, they weren't bad people. And I used to take drugs before, and I'm not a bad person. But they were just interested in stuff that I wasn't interested in at the time. So I would go out with them, and they'd be using drugs before school and after school. And I always sat there and I was like, I never understood why they were doing it. You know, like I couldn't get it into my mind of why are these taking drugs? What is it that they want? Like, why are they taking this high? What they say in recovery, so I'm in recovery from drug addiction. I'll be 5 years clean and sober, thank God, this July. So the sayings in recovery, we always say that if you go to the barber long enough, you're going to get a haircut. So if I'm hanging around the barbers all the time, so I'm going to get a haircut. So if I hang around with 5 people who are playing football, I'm going to be the sixth. You know, if you're in a group of friends and 5 years of hurlers, you're going to be the sixth one to pick up a hurl. And that's the way life was for me. So I kept hanging around these lads and hanging around with them. And it was only the age of 17 then that I ended up picking up a drug. And I get to all that stuff, but that was considered a late starter, unfortunately. I was one of the last ones to join the party, unfortunately. But so that's what's very important. And the lads spoke about it as well. It's not when you're going to be offered drugs, it's who you're going to be offered drugs by. And I was offered drugs first by my best friend. He was the first person to ever offer me drugs. We were up in the night, we were actually in Tala. And we were over in Tala, we were at a graduation. And he asked me, he goes, do you want to try it? And I said, nah, nah, nah. I just kind of hesitated. And he said, are you sure you don't want it? And I said, yeah, I will. And one thing led to another, and I ended up using that life. So that was very important for me. So friends, obviously, is a big thing to me now. So I obviously haven't used drink, or I haven't used drugs. I don't even take prescription medication. I'm totally free from all that type of stuff. I've no interest in it. It's like, who do I surround myself with now? So I surround myself with people who aren't drinking and taking drugs. Because I always ask myself, and the lads, I know lads who take drugs, and I'm friends with a couple of them, but I don't hang around with them, you know, I know them. And I always ask them, like, what feeling are you getting from drugs that you're not getting from life? What are you chasing? What is it that the drugs are doing for you that you cannot do for yourself? So that was very important for me. So yeah, today I just keep my circle small, and friends is very, very important, because if you're not at home sleeping, it's when you get up in the morning, you go out to school, you're with your friends, and after school, you come home, you have something to eat, and you go to train, and you're with your friends. So, you know, you want to surround yourself with the winners, because they're the people you're going to want to be with for the rest of your life. So do it right now. I'm a recovery advocate who's keen to spread the message one person at a time. Today, I hope to influence generations of lives, young and old, because obviously being in recovery now, it's not just young people who are suffering from this. So Ollie is not Ballyragget. I think Paul mentioned Ballyragget. So some of you might be aware that there's a treatment centre over there. So we had all the fellowship meetings over there, all just voluntary stuff, H&I. I was in there and I was with the young lads and I was giving a dig out. I was seeing young lads come in as young as 15 who started using drugs when they were 12 years of age. Had gotten himself into substantial amount of debt, had to move house and all this type of stuff. But on the other side of me, I've been in fellowship meetings where people have came in and as old as 60 and 70 years of age and still can't really get a handle on this. So I always say it doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, what your background, your age, your sex, your religion, any of that type of stuff. It doesn't matter when it comes to drugs and drug addiction. Because in my experience, and I always describe the one person, many of you might know Eminem, the rapper. You know, he's all the money, he's all the cars, he's all the clothes, everything he ever wanted. He was a victim to this. He's 15 years sober now, God love him. But he was another person who fell a victim to this. So, you know, there's no free pass with this type of stuff once you get involved in it. And that's been my experience. And I'm here to give people, refer to the people that was free to give it to me. Because, look, for me, this didn't cost me anything. It didn't cost me anything to get clean. I just had to be willing to go to any lengths to get recovery. I had to be willing to know that there was a new way of life. Because I couldn't see past the life I was living with drugs. And the 7 rules of life, so let it go, ignore them. So don't listen to other people, live a life that's empowering to you. Give it time. Don't compare yourself to other people. So that was a big one for me. I wanted to be a people pleaser and I wanted to do what the lads were doing then because I couldn't manage my own life. Stay calm. It's on you. You're in charge of your happiness and smile because life's too short. So life challenges, drugs and mental health. And obviously before drugs, I would have had mental health problems and dealt with family stuff and under touch and all that. But why am I here? So what's the purpose of me being here? And I always say, like the young lads at the front, I was ye before, and my purpose is here to carry the message to ye. Because there's two ways you can go in life. It's the right way and it's the wrong way. And for me, unfortunately, I ended up doing the wrong thing and picking up drugs. Unfortunately, I nearly lost my life before. I'm going to touch on that as well. So that's my purpose. I did a TV show with David Fitzgerald. I always thought when I say that name around here, because I don't know how much people like him, but I did a TV show with him, so some of you might know it was called Davey's Toughest Team. So it was a documentary, and it was about just people who came from different backgrounds of life. And obviously, my background had been drug addiction, and I'd only got out of a rehab centre. So I got out of a rehab centre on the 6th of December 2019, and then I think it was the end of February 2020, 2 months out of rehab. I'm collecting my little sister from school, and I get a call at 4T saying to be picked for a TV show. And then I'm in there with Davey Fitz and I'm only after getting clean. And we started talking and he goes, you know, you have a purpose in life. And I was like, yeah, my purpose is to play football. And he was like, no, he goes, you know, you can help other people. And it's something I've always wanted to do since getting sober. And he was like, he gave me them little baby steps towards doing this type of stuff. And that's why I've just continued to do it. I want to give someone a bit of hope. So I always say, if I'm in a room with 20 people or in a room with 200 people that could be here tonight, I always believe that there's someone in the room that might have something going on. You know, it doesn't have to be drugs. It doesn't have to be mental health. It could be work. It could be school. It could be football. It could be anything in life. Just a little bit of hope. Obviously, an understanding around drugs and friends and the damages and the harms. And obviously, the parents at the end, if you have any questions about it, signs or anything like that, I'm more than happy to answer any questions any of you have. And just the courage. So I always say, I never had the courage to speak up. You know, I come from a family. I have 4 sisters. It was just me, my 4 sisters and my ma after my dad left. And was like, I never had the courage to speak up because I was always afraid because I wanted to be the man of the house and I didn't want people to know I was weak. So I want to give someone in here the courage if there's anything going on just to speak up.
And what did it for you? Obviously, knowledge around drugs, finding a solution. So the solution might not have to be to drug addiction.
But if it's peer pressure to drugs, if you're starting to feel that, I know it's from 14s to 16s and if you're starting to feel that coming on, like now you're getting more into society and drugs are going to be on the cards. And like we may be realistic in here, a lot of you would have had seen drugs and heard about it by now. So if you need a solution to what to do when it comes to friends,
obviously a bit of identification, if anybody's going to identify with my life and what I do, if you need any tips or anything like that, and the big thing is change. So for me, speaking to you, obviously, you're going to be the leaders of your clubs. That's why you're here. You're the best bungee in your clubs. You know, I would have considered myself one of the best players on my team at the time because I was playing for Kildare. You know, so for you now, what can you do after taking on this information in this talk, bringing it back to your clubs and passing this on to other people? What little change can you make in your life that's going to knock it on the effect of all the junior levels? Because this might be only under 16s, under 15s, or under 14s, but the people who are matter, the under 7s, and the under 8s, and the 9s, and the 10s who are coming up. So what changes can we make to try to drive them people on and give this knock-on effect? Because we have a massive problem in this country that's coming on with drug addiction. So we, as the leaders of your clubs, can start helping each other out and start passing this message on to other people. You know, there will still continue to be a lot of success in Kilkenny. So where did it start? So dealing with challenges. So my family are originally from Dublin as well. My dad's from Ballyfermot, my mom's from Dalkin. They moved down before we were born. Luckily enough, I always say, thank God I wasn't born up there. When we were born, you know, my mom and dad would have dealt with addiction as well, unfortunately. Addiction would have ran in my household, right before my mom and dad, their parents as well. So addiction was always in the family tree. So my parents separated at the age when I was about 10, and my dad left and he went back to Ballyfermot. And I always say, I remember the day they separated, he put the black bags in the green car and he left. And I never seen him for a good while after that. And at that time, we kind of felt like, you know, what am I going to do now? You know, who's going to look after my family, my sisters and all this type of stuff? And from that time in life, I kind of went into myself. I was like, I have to be the man of the house here. I have three sisters. And a year later, my mom was pregnant and then I have a fourth sister coming up. So I have to do everything here. And they always describe, I was born all this love, joy and happiness into their cup, and I wasn't filling up my own cup. So I always described that I had this little hole in the soul. So what did that make it? That means that we have this image. So I always call it the macho man. I always pretended to be someone that I wasn't. I always pretended to be that I was okay. But while all this stuff was going on, I always had the questions in my head. You know, why did my dad leave? Who was going to come watch me play football? And it was only 2 years after that happened that I'd actually got asked. I remember being in the car. I was in the car at the crossroads in Coffee where I'm from. And we got the phone call to say, your son has been asked to be on the development squad for Kildare. And as soon as that happened, it was like, who's going to come watch me play football now? You know, that was the question I'd always lived with. So I bottled up a lot of things. When I was bottled up inside, they always said I was okay. So for me, from a very early age, I would have ran from reality a lot. So my reality was the life I was living at home now. There was a dysfunctional family. My dad had left. Addiction was in the house, playing football at the time. And so football was like an escape for me. So all he is knowing is go to the football pitch. You don't think about school, you don't think about work, you don't think about anything else but just playing hurling. Because we all know that once we get there, our brain switches off and we just love doing what we do. You know, but that was me. As soon as I got there, I was like, I'm here now. And I started playing. But I had so much stuff going on in the background. And when I went home after a football session, I'd have to go home. I'd have to deal with all that stuff that was going on at home again. So very quickly, I wanted to be on the football cage all day, every day. That's all I wanted to do. I wanted to play football, play football, play football. Well, I couldn't do it every day because I still had the life to live. And I was like, this was brilliant. And I started going to the gym before school. I started going to the gym after school, after training. And I was just doing everything just to run away from myself. You know, because it was just, I was very, you know, my mental health wasn't good. Obviously, my parents had separated. I did all these questions. Why wasn't I good enough? And who was going to see me come play? And, you know, I felt really insecure. And I was just trying to fight it all the time. And the gym and football just done everything for me. It just answered all them questions. But there was only so much football could do. And there was only so much the gym could do. And then I got introduced to drugs. So I picked up my first drug at the age of 17. Like I said, considered a late starter in today's terms. When I picked up drugs for the first time, this is how I always describe it. I honestly felt like I fell in love with a woman. And I don't say that lightly. That's how it felt for me. It was like, I took my first line of cocaine. It was like, this was what I was looking for my whole life. So I had the gym, I had football, this is doing everything for me. I felt so good. But then I took drugs and it was like, this had given me this feeling that I'd never had before. And then I kind of started to realise why everyone was taking drugs all the time. It was like, Jesus Christ, this is it now. I'd arrived. This is what I was always searching for. But for me, the drugs were only a short-term solution for a long-term problem. And my long-term problem was life. Dealing with life on life's terms. Dealing with how my life has been living. Dealing with what was going on in my head and at home. So we started taking drugs at the age of 17 in fifth year. And in fifth year, from that summer, I started on a Friday night. So I said, I'm just going to take Cocaine on a Friday night, and that's going to be it. Because I'm still playing with Kildare. I was still on the Kildare team. The minor trials were coming up. So that was it. And very quickly, a Friday night came, a Friday, Saturday night. And a Friday, Saturday night became a Friday night, a Saturday night. And then I'd have a little bit of drugs on a Sunday morning to go home with me and have it in bed while I lay in bed on a Sunday morning. Because I hadn't slept Friday and Saturday night, because all I was doing was taking drugs. And now I was in sixth year in school. So I'm in sixth year and I start selling some drugs. I don't get picked for the Kildare minor team. So then I kind of let loose a little bit. And then I'm in sixth year in school. I start selling some drugs. Everything's great. I think I'm the man. I'm making money. I have the expensive clothes that no one else at school could afford. Because I couldn't afford that when I was young. You know, I come from a council estate. It wasn't a lot of money where I'm from. So I thought this was it. You know, I thought this was the lifestyle I wanted to live. But the reality was, I was just a hurt little boy inside. I still had all these problems that once I stopped taking drugs were on me again. I still had to try to deal with them. I hadn't dealt with any of them. Then I was going through school and I started getting suspended and I started getting in trouble. And our principal actually used to manage Kildare and he goes, look, Connor, the only reason we're keeping you in this school is because you're good at football. And we'd already previously won 2 North Leinster A's and we got to a Leinster final. We lost Benildas by a point in the replay, but that was the only reason he was keeping me in school, and he said that to me as well. And I took advantage of it, and when I started getting suspended, I'd be going up to my new university, so it's a college up where I'm from. I'd be sneaking out, I'd be going to college parties. I was dabbling in MDMA, I was dabbling in ecstasy. And then the stuff I started seeing was crazy, and you know, I didn't know why I was doing it, but all I knew was that was making me feel good. All I wanted to do was feel good. All I wanted to do was chase that high, and that's what I was doing. And by the end of sixth year, I was sitting my Leaving Cert exams, and during my Leaving Cert maths exam, I took too much cocaine before I went in to sit my exam. The first time, obviously some of you is probably none of you have sat your Leaving Cert, so the way it goes, after a half an hour, if you're done, which you shouldn't be done, you can sign the sheet and you can leave. And for me, I answered maybe one or two questions, I signed my name, I watched the clock for the first half an hour, with two sweat patches coming out of me, and as soon as that half an hour finished, I ran. Because I took that much cocaine, I was too paranoid and I couldn't sit in my exam anymore. And that was my state exam, and that's how it went for me. So that was my experience now with drugs at the age of 17, still in school, no job to pay for it, selling drugs. And then I left school. So I left school and I went on a six-year holiday. And you're all going to experience this. And look, I hope you all had the best time. But for me, I didn't. You know, for me, I went on that six-year holiday. And that was the first time I had a bit of freedom, so I didn't have to try hide my drug usage anymore. I didn't have to try hide it from my mom or my 4 sisters. And I went over there for 10 days, and I used for 10 days in a row over there. For the first 4 days, I didn't sleep a wink. I ended up going into psychosis, so for some of you who don't know what psychosis is, basically seeing and hearing things that weren't there. And we were on our way to the club on the 4th day, and I had to be taken off the bus, and I had to be brought home, and I had to be minded like a baby. 2 of my friends just sit there and watch me for the night, so I didn't do anything. That was my experience of using drugs freely for the first time. So, obviously, after that holiday, I said, look, as I was saying to myself, that's it. You know, I'm not going to use anymore. I'm going to come home. I'm going to get a job. I said, I'm done. I'm not doing it anymore. But I crossed this line when it comes to drug addiction that there's no return. It was now that the drugs were the power of me. And the drugs would say jump, and I'd say, oh boy, that was how my life is to be now for the next year and a half, 2 years. I was meant to start an apprenticeship, the job I'm in right now. I was meant to start, obviously, 5 years ago or 6 years ago. I never started that. And I started another job, and it was going well at the start. I could go to work, but I needed drugs to go to work. So on a Monday morning, I was using drugs before I go to work. And then I was using drugs in work. And then I was using drugs when I came home from work. And I was surviving the first couple of weeks going to work using drugs. But then I couldn't start going, I couldn't continue going to work. So then I'd miss work on a Monday. I'd just tell my mom, oh, I just had too much to drink last night. I'm not going to work this morning. Totally playing the fool to her. Still no idea that I took drugs. I was still her golden boy, her only son. I was still her golden boy. I remember hearing her on the phone to her friends in the room. Connor, he had too much to drink last night. He's in bed. But really, I was in bed on my own taking drugs. And that's for the parents. I hid it so well. They had no idea. Until, unfortunately, I had my first overdose at the age of 18. So it was October, and I'd been up using drugs. I hadn't slept for 3 days, and I was meant to paint my room for my ma. And unfortunately, you know, I didn't have them type of plans. I was using drugs for 3 days in a row. I hadn't slept. I hadn't ate. And I had to go into my ma. I said, look, ma'am, long story short, I said, I have a problem with cocaine, and I think I'm going to have a heart attack. You need to ring an ambulance.
And she looked at me and she laughed. And I said, no, no, you don't understand. I said, you need to ring an ambulance. And her exact words were, you don't do drugs. I'm just, oh, ma'am, I said I do drugs. And then I started losing the feeling in my legs and I fell to the floor. And while all this was going on, my sister was ringing an ambulance. And I started, like, getting blurry vision in my eyes. And I started crying my eyes out. And I was holding my ma's hand. I was holding my best friend's hand. And I said, if I die today, I want you to know that I love you. And that was my first real hard experience with drugs. And then, and that was when that happened. So that was that when we first overdosed. It hadn't ended 3 days. And they had to put the opposite of adrenaline into me to slow my heart rate down. Because my resting heart rate was nearly at 200 beats per minute. And I had to go get brought into Mace Hospital. And I woke up and my mum and my sister were at the end of the bed. Bawling their eyes out crying. And I mean bawling their eyes out crying. And I remember sitting up and I looked my mum dead in the eyes and I said, I promise you I'm never going to use drugs again. And I truly believed I was never going to use drugs again. But the thing is with addiction, addiction is so strong, so cunning, baffling, powerful that once you are an addict and you don't have recovery, like I do in my life today, you don't get to make them choices. Because if I had the power to make them choices, I would have stopped straight there and then. But I couldn't. The drugs had the power over me. I got out of hospital then a couple of days later and it was Halloween and I was back out using. And that just led to a worse relapse. So I got out of hospital that time, and obviously what was selling drugs at the start, making money, doing all the type of things I wanted to do, I wasn't selling drugs to people anymore. I was only a drug dealer for myself. And I got out of hospital that time, they owed out €20,000. And €20,000 for someone who's only 18, 19 years of age, can't hold down a job, basically only has a clothes on his back, was a lot of money. So to go to the credit union, or to go to the bank, or to go to the family loans, and to get all this money up, but I'm still continuing to get drugs, and that led into Christmas, and with a big problem at Christmas then, I owed these people a lot of money and they were coming out to my house on Christmas Eve and I had to ring my ma to get my little six-year-old sister out of the house on Christmas Eve because the problems that I was causing from drug addiction. And that's where this stuff was bringing me. But unfortunately, this stuff could only last so long. So they say it was emotionally, financially and spiritually bankrupt. So emotionally, I couldn't feel anything. Like, I always say today, I love my mom. I love my little sister. I love all my family. But when I was going through addiction, I couldn't show them I loved them. The drugs wouldn't let me. And I always describe my little sister now, she's 12, so she would have been about 6 at the time or 7 at the time. And she came into my room one day and she goes, Connor, can I watch a movie with you? And I was sitting up in my room and I was taking drugs on my own. And she goes, can I watch a movie with you? And I said, no. And she goes, I just want the old Connor back. And I know if that was today, if she was to turn around and say, I just want the old Connor back. I do everything in my power to be a brother to her, like I am now. I'm a brother, I'm a son, I'm a cousin, I'm an uncle. You know, I'm a reliable person today. But back then, I couldn't be. And even her, and Carmen knows this, I loved that girl more than I've ever loved anything in my whole entire life. And I'd say that in a room of 1,000 people, it wouldn't bother me. I couldn't show her love because the drugs took it all away to me. Financially, obviously, I owed her a lot of money. And spiritually, so I didn't believe in anything or anyone but the drugs, and that's where I'd been. So I was bankrupt on all accounts. So I couldn't keep living this life. So I was just starting using on a Friday night with the lads. I was now not going out partying. I had no money. I owed out money. I wasn't dealing the drugs anymore, and I wasn't leaving my room. I was going to the toilet in a bottle, and I was pouring out the window, and I was using drugs in my room. I'd use from Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I'd sleep on the Thursday, and Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I'd use again. And that's how my life started to go. And look, I just couldn't manage it anymore. I just couldn't do it. It was too much. And so it was Mother's Day 2019. I kind of just, you know, had enough. And the lads were all out. They were all out with the session down at the Liffey. And I went down to them. And I always describe, I was with them. And I could have been 12 was down there at that time. And every event I went to when I was taking drugs, I could have been in a room with 1,000 people. But I always felt like it was on my own. I was always just felt so lonely. And I was down there and I was with them. And they were all having the crack. And I'd be walking away from them, and they'd have my hands in my head. They'd be walking back, and I'd act like everything was okay. They'd walk away again. Because the drugs just had my mind destroyed. I was mentally just destroyed from the drugs. And they were all leaving because it was Mother's Day. And I said, look, I'm going to get a bit of sleep. I'm going to sleep there in the tree, and I'm going to get up, and I'm going to go home, and I'm going to see my ma. And I'm just going to make things right. And one of the lads was like, no, you come with me. And I said, no, I'm going to stay here. And they left, and that was it. I just broke down crying. Just started screaming, crying, and I was walking down back and forward up along the water, and I'm saying, I just want to stop using drugs, but I can't. I just want to be able to show my mother I love her, but I can't. I just want to be able to play football, but I can't. I want to be able to go to the gym, but I can't. I couldn't, I was incapable of living life anymore. And I just broke down, I'd hit a low point, and I remember looking across the water and I was hoping someone would just walk out through the trees, swim across me, grab me and give me a hug and tell me everything would be okay. That's all I wanted. And I sat there by the side of the water after walking up and down, screaming, crying, taking off my clothes every time I walked up and down by the water. I tried to take my own life that day. And someone came behind me and grabbed me by the neck and pulled me along the ground. And I looked and it was one of the lads who'd been there earlier that day. And he goes, what would you do if we never came back with a bottle of water that you asked for? And all I did was scream and cry. I cried like a little baby. I genuinely cried and cried and cried. And he was hugging me and I was hugging myself. And yeah, I just never felt so alone. And it was at that moment now, like, I knew something needed to change. At the age of 13, at the age of 12, I got called up to the development squad from 13 to 17 playing with Kildare. I won a Leinster with Kildare. I won two Lord Leinsters with my school. I won a championship with my club. I was successful in my footballing career. You know, how did I get here? You know, I was doing good in my football career, I wasn't looking after myself in my own head. That's where I started to pick up drugs. So what did I need to do now? How did I get here? So I had to surrender. You know, I had to give up. I had to admit that I have a problem and I couldn't do it on my own. And I had to reach out. You know, I had to reach out for a bit of help. So that day, I ended up going into Naas Hospital because I was in fear of taking my own life. I'd openly admitted. I said, look, I can't do it anymore. I'm going to take my own life. So they brought me in. They put me on the trolley and they got the head psychiatrist in Naas Hospital to come and talk to me. And she goes, do you want help? And I said, look, I'll do anything. I said, I'll do anything to get clean. She goes, you start talking and I'll start writing. And I just started talking about everything from when I was that age, everything that was going on in my life, and she wrote it all down. She had about 15 pages written down. And after she finished writing, she goes, Connor, how do you feel? And I said, I feel good. And she goes, a problem shared is a problem halved. 7 billion people on the planet, Connor. Why do you think you have to do this on your own? Why have you been bottling up all these feelings, all these emotions, all these problems? You don't need to do it. You know, you don't need to do it anymore. She goes, I promise you, you're going to get your well. You're going to be all right. You're going to be all right. So that led me to start attending a youth reach centre. So I started going to a community centre out in Naas, close to where I'm living. I started going drug counselling once a week and I just kept checking in with her. But from then on, then they mentioned the treatment centre. Would you go away and go to a treatment centre? I said, here, look, I said, I'll do anything. I said, if you ask me to go into the middle of Naas with no clothes on and stand there for the day if I get clean, I said, I will do it. I said, I'll absolutely do anything to stop using drugs. And yeah, so we worked together. I worked with the youth reach centre and in between this wait, between Mother's Day and the day I went into treatment, I was still using drugs because I still had no solution. You know, I knew that I could go into treatment, but I didn't know what the solution was. And I ended up getting into a rehab centre on the 17th of July 2019, and I haven't had to pick up a drink or a drug since. So how is it being now? Like, how do we stay here? How is my life? Look, I have a way better life than I've ever had before. And I don't say that lightly. And now, since I've been in recovery, it's given me the ability to be able to deal with anything that goes on in my life. So how do we stay here? I have mentors. I have people who can guide me in my recovery. People who I can talk to at any time of the day. I don't live by the old saying that, you know, it's kind of fizzled out now that, oh, men can't talk, men have to do this, man. I don't go by that bullshit anymore. Anytime that there's something going on in my life, I pick up the phone and I ring one of my friends and say, look, I'm having a bad day, can you give us a dig out? And I always find at the end of the phone call, I realised that anything that was going up here, I just made it worse than it was. I just needed to talk to someone about it. I opened up, like I said, about what's going on. I just be myself and I protect myself at all times because I'm the most important person in my life. You're the most important person in your life. No, I'm not doing this for anyone else. I'm doing this for me. I didn't get clean for my sister. I didn't get clean for my ma. I didn't get clean for my dad. I got clean for me and everyone else benefited from that. I watch people's faces and things. So like I said, the people I hang around with, the places I go to and the things I do. So the places. Look, and it's all right when you get older. Do what you want to do. Go out and go to clubs and have fun. Just remind yourself, like, you don't need drugs to have fun. And that was the big misconception for me. I've had more fun in a travel. I'm only actually back from Africa. I went to Africa for a couple of weeks with some of the lads. I'm headed to India at the end of the year. I've been to more places and done more things in my life than I ever did when I was using. And when I was selling drugs, and when I thought I was living the best life. This is the life. Obviously, discipline, I need to have discipline. And obviously as athletes as well, like for me, discipline is a big thing. So as an athlete, for me, I always like to journal. So I wake up every morning, instead of turning over, like picking up my phone and seeing what's on Instagram or Snapchat and TikTok, which I don't actually use any of. I wake up in the morning, I go into the kitchen,
I take out my journal and I write how I'm feeling. I write out my goals for the day. What do I want to be? And it's not even got to do with training. Well, I want to be a good person. I want to be honest. I want to be kind. I want to watch how I speak to people. And I want to be a good person in football training. That's what I do. And then I come at the end of the day and I write how my evening was and I write how training went. And I go to my little checklist of what I've done for the day and I tick them all off. And if there's some things I didn't do, ended up, you know, not being the person I wanted to be, I put a question mark beside it and I go again tomorrow. Because life is an ongoing thing. Life isn't just one thing that's here today and it's gone tomorrow. Life is an everyday thing, so I just try to get better every day. And look, I have gratitude. I'm very grateful I was able to come here tonight, and I wasn't actually supposed to be coming. You know, there's things going on at home, unfortunately. My mum's not well, and just to be here tonight, I managed to just come here, and I'm just very grateful to be able to be here, because no matter what's going on in my life, my primary purpose is to come here and carry the message to all you young lads. So I hope one of you is, hey, some little nugget of information from this. You know, I don't expect us all to absorb everything. We'll just take one thing home, which is whatever it is that's stuck in your mind at the end of the talk, take it home, which is, and don't be afraid to talk to people. Life is much easier lived when you let people in. So, look, there's my social media. If any of you ever want to chat or you've had any questions or anything like that, I'm always free to talk to anyone. So I want to wish you all the best of luck in your hurling careers and whatever it is, just continue to do. Just do it to your best of your ability. And you won't be too far wrong. So I'll leave it there. And thanks, lads.